Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 11th of June, Anno Domini 2006. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. It's 8 minutes after the hour, and we've got all kinds of interesting things to talk about. So let us jump right in. Symantec has slapped Microsoft with an injunction against Vista. They're suing Microsoft.
You knew this was coming.
Yeah. It's just, I'm sure, the start of a million of these things. Symantec is suing Microsoft over the volume manager software that it acquired when it purchased Veritas last year. Symantec purchased Veritas. They own the patent to the volume management software that Microsoft is using. Symantec is looking for unspecified damages and an injunction that could halt the release of Vista and the Longhorn server suite.
Now, with that said, now could this be Microsoft and Symantec working together to get Microsoft more time for an operating system?
I don't think Symantec needs an injunction. Microsoft can't get it out the door anyway.
Yeah, ain't that?
Well, that's what I was wondering.
Every time you turn around, they just took something else out the other day. That's another news item I got in here somewhere. It's ridiculous. They just keep pulling features out. When they first announced it, it was going to be the greatest thing since laser sliced bread, and it was going to do pretty much everything but your dishes.
And you might as well stay with XP.
And right now, there's no reason to move on, except, of course, they'll eventually shut down XP. But in general, it's in this particular case, the court order they're seeking would stop Microsoft from doing any further development, distribution, or selling of Microsoft products that incorporate the technology. Now, it looks like the only versions that are using that technology right now are Vista and Longhorn, but I'm sure that that'll be part of the lawsuit if and when it comes to light.
Oh, yeah. So. And like you say, I wonder if that's them, you know, giving Microsoft more time to get the product out, because they already, you know, they
But Microsoft has a problem, and this is something else we'll talk about later.
What week?
Yeah, right.
Which week are we talking about?
But we'll talk about this more when we talk about the poll. But the reality is that Microsoft doesn't make money if you don't buy a new operating system. They don't have new markets to sell into. They own it all. Well, they don't own the server market entirely, but they're working on it. And so if you don't buy a new version of Windows every couple of years, they don't make money.
Yeah, but they're making money on every machine that goes out the door to most of these bigger companies, like your Dell Superstores and your Gateways and all those, because they've got to sell a system with an OS on it. And even if they've got it, say, XP, the original XP, and they go out and buy a new machine, they're getting another copy now because it's one copy, one machine. But like you say, they're looking for that big, huge nut that they can get when they
when everybody upgrades.
Yeah, when everybody goes out there and upgrades. But the problem is, though, it's just not the OS. Every time he upgrades, you now then have to think about that. Well, is this machine going to be able to handle it? And the jump from XP up to this new Vista is you're going to need a lot more horsepower than you did from going from, say, Windows 98 Second Edition up to XP.
Yeah. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago, too, how you're going to need at least a gig of RAM. At least a gig of RAM.
Yeah.
At
Pentium
least 4.
Pentium 4. No Pentium 3s or even XP. I've had some folks run it on a Pentium 2, a high-end Pentium 2.
Can't be done.
Uh-uh. It's definitely going to be Pentium 4s and up.
Yep. It's a whole new ball game. I keep telling people, The price of poker keeps going up, and this is one of those instances. When you're looking to buy Vista, and in addition, your graphics card will cost as much as a low-end machine if you want all the nifty eye candy that's supposed to be available in Aero.
To get a decent one, you're going to spend at least $500.
Yes.
Just on the video.
You can buy a whole computer for $500, and now you're looking at $500 for the video.
Just the video.
And those low-end machines are not going to be able to run Vista satisfactorily.
And what a lot of folks are getting into it, I've found more and more folks doing, is doing dual monitors. The flat panels have become so inexpensive that they're getting, say, twin 17s or twin 19s, and with these new video cards, literally running two monitors to do their desktop.
Yep.
Because they might have something else, and they push that over on the other screen because it's literally moving the cursor from one... I'm going to do it again.
Dave is working very hard at spilling his coffee.
He almost
did it onto Steve's back, and now he's...
But going from screen to screen is going to be, you know, it's just so easy because it's just boop, boop.
And a lot of times, twin 17s is cheaper than a 20.
Yep. Yes. Yes, absolutely. And so we're going to be seeing a lot of that, and I think that you need to be aware when you start putting your pennies away to buy that brand new Vista machine, that it's going to cost you a lot more money than you think. Those low-end machines, they're great for the older operating systems. They're terrific for Linux. They're just not going to cut it when it comes to Vista because Vista is not designed. When the company's run by a multi-billionaire, you don't necessarily expect that he's going to think, well, gee whiz, what about those folks who may be on a limited income or whatever?
Well, and that's not to defend Microsoft for a minute, but maybe I will. That's a problem that Apple and Microsoft and all the companies have had, is that in order to make your things better and give people an incentive to buy the better thing, you often have to sacrifice backward compatibility.
And Apple has done that. Apple has seriously, at least twice,
Four times in their 30-year history, they've made a radical change to their chipset or their architecture or their operating system.
Well, the other thing, too, though, is we got to step back for a minute, too, is remember back when Windows 95 came out.
Right.
Remember, there were a lot less peripherals around for the operating system to work with.
Right.
I mean, DVD burners, even CD burners, they weren't, you know, well, DVD burners weren't around. CD burners were costing you a couple $1,000s.
Printers plugged into the serial port, modems plugged into the parallel port, modems plugged into the serial port, and that was pretty much it.
Yeah, and I mean, now you've got USB ports and FireWire and so many other peripherals that Windows now, you plug it like a thumb drive.
Yep.
You can take a jump drive, plug it into an XP box, and it automatically knows it. A camera, you can just plug it in on the fly, and it'll say, oh, I just found this new camera. Do you want to use it? And put in the appropriate drivers, and it's just there.
Yep.
And I mean, and given the different motherboard manufacturers and the combinations, this is where, you know, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it is hard. It's hard for any of them, and that's one of the reasons that operating systems like Linux lag behind a little bit in the driver area is simply because the companies that make these things can only really work on one operating system at a time, and of course they're going to start with Windows. That's understandable. Mm-hmm. So it's up to that open source community to bring those things into play on the Linux side. But you're now seeing that capability everywhere. I can plug dang near anything into this box, and it'll be recognized, unless it's real bleeding edge. But the thing is that you're right. With the older operating systems and with the older software, you had less to do. They were simpler devices, and so you had simpler operating system to run them on. And even
before that, you know, the switch from command line to graphical interface, a command line program is really easy to write. Sit there and wait for someone to type a command, and then it's an if loop. You know, if they type this command, do this. With the graphical interface, it's always looking for the mouse movement, the cursor pointer. Did he click? Did he left click? Did he right click?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of the development effort over the last, say, 10 years has gone into creating IDEs so that you can write that code integrated development environments so that you can write that code easier and faster. The environment that you're writing in, the editor that you're writing in, actually does most of the work for you. You know, click a button and there's a framework for a function. Click a button and there's a framework for a form, you know, whatever it might be that you're going to put on the screen. But that helps. But you're right. And that's why a lot of the software that's out there, and I'm including Windows itself in this, has so many bugs because so many hands get on it. No one person writes an operating system anymore. The days of CPM are gone. Mm-hmm. You know, no one person writes that stuff. And so you get 100,000 people writing it. They're all writing based on specifications that some third person wrote. It just gets nuts. By the time you're done, you've had 2,000 strangers all touching any one piece of code, and no wonder they don't all work together perfectly.
Well, it's just like they've got a whole team that just handles just the control panel. When you click on, say, control panel, and you see all those icons there, there's literally a separate team that works on those and getting those all to work correctly.
Yep. All right, listen, we're going to take a break. Give us a call. A couple lines left open. If you're calling in the 585 area code, it's 222-1180. Outside the 585 area code, it's a Choice 1 toll-free line at 800-295-1180. And, of course, if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, it's Star 1180. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. We've got a lot more to talk about in the news, and we've got the poll and all the other cool stuff that's going on, and we'll be taking your calls on the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites. And you're going to find it only here at the great 1180 WHAM.
Computer Show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, this is Soundbites. And we're going to talk about all kinds of interesting things, including, I suspect, we should probably go right to your phone calls. Our first caller, Brian in Caledonia.
Caledonia.
I can't see it from here. Caledonia. Welcome, Caledonia. Brian. What's your question?
Oh, thank you. Yep, Caledonia. I've been working all weekend trying to put our prom videos and pictures on a DVD, and I have it all set up. I'm using a Mac, G4, 1.33 gigahertz. And I used iMovie to put the movie in, and then I transferred it to iDVD. Everything looks great on the screen, but when I burn it, only the first video clip has sound to it, and the other ones are quiet. Everything else is fine. Any ideas?
We had some similar questions last week of trying to burn DVDs. You can try burning at a slower speed. Sometimes it's the faster speed of your burning creates discs that aren't playable on other players. Does the Mac itself play back the DVD normally?
I haven't put it. I'm just putting it into a regular DVD player because that's what my audience is going to have. When I have it before I burn, everything plays on the screen there, but I haven't put it into the Mac to see.
Yeah, I would start, try that. If it works there, then we know it's, if it doesn't work there, then we've got bigger problems. But if it works there, then we know that it's either a speed issue or
the process of elimination.
Yeah.
Right. And do you know what version of iDVD you're using?
It came with a Mac probably about a year and a half ago. It's probably a little older one.
Well, make sure you have all the updates and patches loaded.
Okay.
There was a patch for version 6, which came out about 6 months ago.
Okay.
The 601 patch to address some sound issues.
Okay, I'll go grab those then.
All righty.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Okay.
Excellent. Thanks. Our next caller, Mike from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Here's
good.
I just bought a video game, right, for the computer, and it doesn't work because the driver, the graphic driver, is not compatible. Well, what can I do to make this game work? Because obviously I can't take it back. I've already opened it.
Well, then you're going to have to get a better a graphics card.
Yeah, you'll have to buy a new graphic card.
Yeah, are you one of those machines where the graphic card is on the motherboard?
I think so, yeah. The HP, only a couple years old.
Yeah, a lot of those machines, one of the ways that they lower the price of the machine is by putting a video card right on the motherboard of the machine. Unfortunately, those are not high-end cards. And consequently, you often find that they don't play the high-end game. So the only way you can fix that is to buy a good video card, install it, and when you install
another possible solution is going to the BIOS and see how much memory is allocated to the video. If it's only set for 4 meg or 8 meg of your memory for video, that may be why the game isn't running. You can try upping that. It'll slow down the rest of the performance of the machine, but it may get your game working.
One other thing, though, you want to check is look on the side of the box for the game to see what video cards they recommend.
Right.
Because you don't want to go out and buy, you know, spend some good bucks on one and then find out that, oh, this two doesn't work. Because then you'll be stuck with a video card also.
Okay, what's a video card run average price?
They go all the way from
$20 to $2,000.
Yeah.
Oh, they start at $20 though. Okay.
Yep. Well, but that may not be what you need. Again, check the side of the box and see what you need.
Get at least 128 meg one.
Yeah.
$70.
All right. We're going to take another quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco. We've got some folks on the line. Please hold on. We'll get to you shortly. And we'll be back with the greatest computer show in the known universe at 27 after the hour. This is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 31 minutes after the hour, this is Soundbites. Give us a call. Let me give you those numbers again. If you're in the 585 area code, it's 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, the Choice One toll-free line is 800-295-1180. And, of course, Verizon Wireless customers can just hit *1180. Before we get back to the phones, however, it is this Tuesday is Microsoft Patch Day. Once a month, Black
Tuesday,
Tuesday,
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, right. Microsoft plans to release a dozen security patches, they call them bulletins, to provide fixes for a wide range of critical software vulnerabilities. They're going to have patches for a critical zero-day flaw in Word. A zero-day flaw means not only was the flaw discovered, but that very same day there were viruses out that took advantage of it. There's an Internet Explorer update that deals with the way browsers handle ActiveX controls. The Microsoft Office update will offer a comprehensive fix for that Word flaw. There's 9 bulletins covering bugs affecting Windows. There's 1 bulletin for Exchange. There's 2 separate bulletins for Microsoft Office. Everything's critical except the Exchange one, which is only important. I don't know why that's not critical because so many people use it, but whatever. So remember, Tuesday is patch day, which means all the new viruses will come out on Wednesday.
Yeah, which they always do. Well, no, usually what they do is they'll wait, because most updates for the virus programs come out on Wednesday. They wait until Thursday to release a virus,
right,
sometime during Thursday, because they figure by the time it gets out there, you're coming up on the weekend.
Right.
And a lot of IT places and they don't have time to react.
Right.
So you got patches on Tuesday, DAT files on Wednesday, viruses on Thursday.
Okay, excellent. It's good to know there's a schedule. Our next caller is Rick from Albion, New York. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
Yeah, I have a Gateway computer, and I believe I have a 932 Lexmark printer.
Mm-hmm.
The printer prints the last page first, and I just can't figure it out.
That's a feature. So when you print a 5-page document, it comes piled up, page one on top.
So how do I correct?
There's one of two places that you can fix that. One is in the printer itself if it's a model that's got a front panel. If not, then you can fix it in the driver. When you go to the driver, you can click on properties.
Yeah, the properties.
Okay. Look through that. There will be something that says reverse printout or last page first.
Okay, because sometimes I'll only get even half a page. So
that's a separate issue.
Yeah. You might want to look for some updates for the drivers for that printer.
Yeah, okay. There may be a number of updates for that driver. What often happens is printers that have very little memory in them.
Which is that most inkjet printers have no memory at all.
Yeah.
Right, and they'll use your memory to the memory in your computer to actually image the picture. Now, if you don't have a lot of memory in the computer, then they only get a very limited amount of memory, and they can't do a whole page of graphics.
Sometimes you can fix that by printing one page at a time, right, and not, you know, three pages in a row.
Right. But that's part of that. So that's a separate problem. But in terms of the last page first, that's likely to be either on the front panel or in the driver itself under properties.
Okay. Because what I do is, even though I did try the front page, I mean the one page only, mm-hmm, it still gives me the last page first.
Yeah, because that's the way right, it's
and that's a separate issue.
Memory.
Right. Okay. You got two separate issues going on.
Thank you, sir, very much.
Absolutely, our pleasure. Enjoy yourself. Our next caller is Mateo from Oakfield. Where's Oakfield, Mateo?
Right in between Buffalo and Rochester.
Oh, cool.
Apparently,
what's
a
up?
Lot of oaks there.
What's your question?
How do you switch a hard drive out of a iBook?
How do you switch it?
Yep.
Steve?
Same way you do out of any computer. Take the computer apart, pull the drive out, and put a new one in.
Now, the iBook is a little tricky to take apart,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it's not user serviceable, so you have to find someone that knows what they're doing. There's dozens of screws and some pretty interesting gently pry instructions.
Yeah. That's why almost all Mac service really should be done by an authorized vendor, because if you screw it up, then if you open the case, then you've voided your warranty. Now, if it's out of warranty, then you can take your chances with it. But in general, it's just a regular IDE drive, right, Steve?
Yeah.
So really all you need to do, Mateo, is any IDE drive of the right size, and that would be what?
Two and a half inch, 9mm.
Right.
Toshiba.
So any one
yeah,
of
Toshiba,
those drives
Fuji,
will work,
IBM.
But getting that machine open and getting it open is not hard, Mateo. Getting it closed up again and working, that's harder.
But you can Google Google for opening an iBook. You'll find instructions and pictures. If it's something, if you're not comfortable opening computers, it may not be something you want to try.
Yeah, and like you said, though, if it's still under warranty, realize that you're running the risk that if it gets screwed up, oh, well, you just bit the bullet on that one.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, what's interesting is the new MacBook does have a user serviceable hard drive where it's easy to slide out and put a bigger one in.
Right, a lot of the older, a lot of the PC machines have a door under the base that lets you just pop that open, and there are a couple
pops
of things
right
you can
out.
Do. You can add RAM, or you can replace the hard drive, or whatever. But that's semi user serviceable, and the new iBooks have that, but older iBooks don't, and that means you have to pry the entire machine apart.
Yeah, it was basically Apple trying to protect the users from themselves. If it's too easy to get open, you're more easy to break it once you're inside.
Yeah, exactly. All right, thank you, Mateo, and good luck on that. Our next caller, Will from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Will. What's your question?
How do you do?
I do good. How do you do?
Great program, you guys.
Thank you.
I have a little bit of a situation where when I was running under Windows 98, okay, mm-hmm, and doing a Word letter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I used to be able to use my function keys F6, F7, F8 to give me the umlauts, the special characters.
Right.
I'm talking about the German ones, not any other language, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how can I go back in and do the very same thing as I'm now running under XP? How...
That's not a feature in Windows. Generally, to get the extended characters, you have to hold down the Alt key and type the 4-digit ASCII code on your numeric keypad. It was usually a lot easier to open the character. Character map?
Control
panel.
There are a couple of ways. Now, what version of Word are you using?
Now you got me with my suspenders down.
Well, what you might want to try is this. The accent grave, which is that backwards apostrophe.
Accent grave, yeah. We have it in French. You have it in Spanish. You have
right.
It.
Yeah. That's control and that key.
Do what?
Hold the control key down while you press that accent grave, and that should put it on the letter that you just typed.
But he's looking for the umlaut over a U, the two dots.
The A, the U, or the O in the German language.
To put an umlaut in, you hold control and shift and press the colon.
Oh.
That's intuitive.
And then press the letter. Okay. So it's you do that first, and then the letter.
Do I have to be in the screen that tells me the special characters while I do that?
No, you can do that right from the keyboard on Word. So let's say you're going to type, hello with the umlaut over the O. I don't know why. You would type that H-E-L-L, then you would type Control Shift colon and the O would have an umlaut over it.
Okay.
That also works for the caret.
Yep.
Control Shift the caret, Control Shift the tilde to get an N-Y. Control Shift and that accent grave or accent ague, the backwards or forward apostrophe.
It doesn't matter which language it is, but specifically, right. I'm dealing with those three special German characters.
There you go. That's how you get them. Hold the Control Shift key down. Press that letter. We'll put up a link to a PDF that will give you all of those. That's available out on the web, and it's fairly easy to get to. So we'll put that up during the break, which, in fact, we'll take right now. So if you go to our website, and just give me a minute or two to get it up there. Steve's going to type it in. But if you go to our website, soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Click on the links tab, and you'll see the third or fourth link down on the show, and that'll lead you to it. But give us a couple of minutes to actually get it up. It's a fairly involved and convoluted URL. But we're going to do that. We're going to do that right now, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco, at 41 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
When you wake up. We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. What? It's gloomy. Those are clearly steel wool skies.
Nice and blue, different shades of blue. Now it's just Battleship Gray.
Sure. We could tell everybody it's 92 and sunny. And then they'll think we're
in Florida.
Somewhere else. Yeah, right. All right, before we get back to the phones, we mentioned a little earlier about zero-day exploits. I want to explain a little bit about what those are. What happens is... the normal way these things work is somebody finds a virus out in the wild, sends it to one of the antivirus sites, who then shares it among all the other places, and they put out a fix. Generally, that's somebody finds it pretty quick, and it doesn't get out much. Nowadays, so many of these things happen on the web that those things are out live on the web long before they're actually discovered by the antivirus people. Those are called zero-day attacks or zero-day exploits. And what's happening now is that these internet-based threats, these so-called zero-day exploits or attacks, are proliferating at an incredible rate. A large number of legitimate websites have been used for these criminal purposes. One of the things that happens with these things is... you get to somebody's site, and they're running ads down the side, and those ads come from an ad service, and nobody actually vets those ads. Nobody checks each and every one of those ads for a problem. Well, what happens is these unscrupulous guys take out ads, pay money to have their ads come up fast or first. Yep. And those ads have the virus in them. So legitimate websites find that they've got these viruses on them. Now, that's a real problem for all the antivirus programs. For example, the widely publicized WMF, the Windows Metafile attack, which was launched last December, accounted for roughly 33% of all the exploits last month. And yet, Microsoft put out a fix for that in January. So I think there are some of you are just a little bit behind, but there's a growing trend among all these bad guys to use the power of the internet and search engine sites and that stuff to distribute their code. A lot of people are buying prefabricated zero-day attacks from the writers. They're basically script kiddies, and they hide them on legitimate websites and offload the programs onto the users. So you need to be really careful. Of course, all of these things attack through Internet Explorer. So if you're not using Internet Explorer, which I would hope at least the majority of those of you listening to us would do, if you're not using Internet Explorer, you have a much better chance of not getting these things. So switch now if you haven't switched already to Firefox. But let's go back to the phones. Our next caller is John in Webster, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I just recently switched over to the world of Mac and never been happier.
Congratulations.
I've got a so my network now is set up on Mac, but I do have one laptop that's a PC, and I'm having a hard time getting rid of it. So I wanted to join up to that network, and it's not letting me on the network. Can they coexist on one network? Or
sure. The trick is that the Macintosh supports many different network types, Mac networks, Unix networks, Windows networks. So you have to enable whichever network service you want. In the system preferences under sharing, you can turn on Windows sharing, so then a PC will be able to log into that Mac.
Okay. And my brother's been trying to get me to switch to Mac for about 5 years now. He finally bought me a Mac laptop, and I'll tell you, it's the best thing in the world I ever did. I wish I did it 5 years ago.
There you go. Steve, now you know how to get me to switch to a Mac. Yep. Buy me one.
Buy you one, yep.
Right. Yeah.
Not going down every other week with the latest virus and spyware is just really nice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Congratulations, John. Thanks. And your brother, nice guy. Got to admit that.
Is he adopting?
Yeah. No. He doesn't. Is it only his brother he's buying stuff for? Because I'm open to that.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I could use an iPod.
Sure. I actually have a Mac Mini, and I like it a lot. I do. I like it a lot. It's not going to get me off my Linux box, but I like it a lot. All right, listen, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We got a couple of people on the line, so hang on. If you're not on the line, I don't know why you're not. You should be. You know the numbers by now, 222-1180 in the 585 area code. Outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180 on that Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, you Verizon Wireless customers just have to hit *1180, and you'll be on with us. So we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, ably working the boards for us, doing yeoman service back there. And me, Nick Francesco, at 51 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
More than you can understand. It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. we're going to talk to Ken from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
Oh, good afternoon. I got a Mac. I've got an HP... The motherboard died off, and I took the hard drive out, and I put it on another computer and tried to run it, and it says something about needs a password.
Now, wait a minute. What OS were you running?
It was running XP. It's a crime because they put these XPs into, like, a Pentium 3 with, like, 64 megs of RAM. It wasn't running at all.
But here's the first thing. First thing, though.
Okay.
When you just can't take a hard drive, especially running XP, out of one machine and just slap it in and boot it up into another one.
Uh-huh.
All the drivers and motherboard issues.
The motherboard,
are different.
All the information that was set up in the original XP has to be reinstalled for that new machine. So you literally got to reinstall Windows over Windows to get it so it sees the new hardware. But if you just wanted to, get files off of it, you can take it to local shop, and we can pull the information off.
Yeah, you
mount
it as a slave drive.
I can pull the information because I can put it on as a second hard drive.
There you go. Do that.
But, yeah, I can do that on mine. But how could I like take that information, like how do you transfer to a larger hard drive if I do put it back into an extra?
The information is easy. The programs are hard.
Yeah.
That's the real difference.
You have to ghost that hard drive to get it.
Yeah, there
to
are
bigger
there
one.
Are commercial programs to do that, like Ghost.
Okay.
Maxtor and Seagate hard drives often come with a floppy disk with some sort of migration tool built into them.
But again, even when you do that, you then have to reinstall Windows over Windows.
Yep,
to change the drivers, to change the basic configuration.
If you're just putting a bigger hard drive in the same computer,
it won't even boot up because it's. I mean, I can put in a startup disk and it won't go because it's asking for an administrator password.
Then you have to put in the password that you created on that other computer when you set up that hard drive.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are ways around it, but people like Dave have programs that'll get past that, but it's not common to have them and it's not easy to do without them.
Okay, I understand, but Norton Ghost works really well with transferring them over.
Yeah.
Cuz I want to put it onto a bigger hard drive and then I can put it back into the original machine.
Right, a bigger hard drive on the same computer is really much easier than moving it to a different computer. Now, for a different computer, you use the Microsoft Files and Settings Transfer Wizard.
Right, and that'll check.
That'll change all your files and settings and then you reload your applications.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've never had good luck using the transfer wizard.
Yeah, you and everybody else.
I actually had it work for me the other day.
Holy
After
cow.
All these years, it worked once.
Well,
for the very first time, everything worked fine.
I've been able to use it to work quite a bit, but here's the scenario that it messes up. If you've got a 98 machine, and say I'm on an NT network or a network, and you ghost it over to a larger hard drive, and then all the mapping of the drives on the new get messed up.
Yeah,
I was going from XP to XP, so that probably made it work.
Yeah, the files don't agree or something like that. And
you get a lot of that.
Yeah, it gets messed up.
Yeah, I try to stay away from things that I don't understand.
There you go. Well, give that a shot and let us know how you make out.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Yep.
All right, that's a problem that people are going to have with the next version. As well, you're not going to be able to move a lot of the stuff you've got. We don't even know yet if Vista will install cleanly over XP. It's not...
Well, if it depends on Microsoft, he's going to have to. I mean, but again, it's all going to come down to hardware.
Well, that'll be the first patch.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. The first time it comes out, it's going to be only on new machines anyway.
Yeah.
And then when you buy it, hopefully it'll install. I know it'll install. I mean, they're going to make it install. I don't know how clean it'll be. I don't know what it'll screw up or what'll be a problem. I've been getting email from people who apparently downloaded the beta 2.
Mm-hmm.
There's a beta 2 out that you can get into the deal with. So a number of people I know have downloaded it, and now they're calling me with questions. And I keep telling them, I can't help you. There's no support for it.
Yeah,
and I don't even have it on a machine yet. I don't have time.
No.
If they're legally licensed to download the beta, they should already have the Microsoft support links.
Well, and that's what I told them. If you've got the support links, you're good. And if you don't, I don't know where you got it, but I can't help you either. It's a beta code. It's supposed to break. Congratulations. It's working the way it's supposed to.
That's what you're doing. Thank you for calling.
Next contestant, please. We're going to take a quick break. Rob Jason is in here to give us all the information. Buzz Jason is in here to give us all the information about the news, the sports, the weather, all the good stuff. So we're just going to take a quick break, kick back in the sauna, and be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you at 59 minutes after the hour. It's the greatest computer show in the known universe. Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, it's the second hour of Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. We've got folks on the line. We'll get to you in just a minute. But first, I want to talk a little bit about what happens at our website, soundbites.org. That's the Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. I don't think she ever realized what she was going
in a while.
What she was going getting herself in for when she mentioned that years ago. The poll, we do a poll every week. Last week's poll was about the Windows Genuine Advantage warning. People are starting to get that on their machines now because they have Microsoft has started this program where they check to see if you have a legitimate copy of Windows before they'll do any updates or any of that sort of thing. 275 of you voted. Thank you very much. And 39% of you have indeed seen the Windows Genuine Advantage. 27% have not. 19% of you had no clue. 26 people just checked the Linux, and 18 people checked the Macintosh. This week's poll requires a bit of explanation, I think. Microsoft has decided that they're done now. Party's over. Bye-bye. Thanks for playing.
They were a long time ago.
Right. They've decided they're no longer going to be supporting Windows 98, Windows 98 Second Edition. And I know, Dave, this in particular hurts you, but Microsoft is dropping support for Windows Millennium Edition, ME.
Wait a minute. They're just now? They did it 3 years ago.
Noel, this is everything. The important part of this is no more hotfixes. So what they're saying, what Microsoft is saying, is that it's too much work for them to fix the critical flaws in an 8-year-old operating system. It is no longer feasible for them to create patches for those machines. So they're simply not going to do it anymore. Public and technical support for 98, 98 SE and ME will formally end July 11th or 12th, depending on which site you look at. It doesn't much matter. One day, more
when
or less.
When did they ever have a patch, though, recently for 98 anyway?
They have had the security patch. The really critical security patches have had updates.
But I mean regular
But they're
patch.
Even stopping that. And they've got 6 security patches coming out Tuesday. Right. And they're not going to be available for 98. So those of you who are still running 98, 98 SE, or ME have known open critical patches that will never be fixed by Microsoft. So you need to know that, and you need to get off of those operating systems now. Now, I realize that this is a problem for those of you who are on any sort of fixed income or budget, and are unable to just rush right out and buy a brand new operating system. But hey, when the guy who runs the company is the richest man in the known universe, sometimes that's the sort of thing that happens.
That's the way it goes.
So this week's poll just simply says my main operating system is, and I go all the way back to 95, 98, ME, NT, 2000, XP, Linux, the Macintosh, and other. Please leave an opinion so that you can type in whichever one of those you may happen to have.
I had a client that I reinstalled the OS for.
Yeah.
Windows 3.1.
I knew you were
going to
say that because I didn't go back that far.
He's the only one that I've seen it.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, Samantha, she goes, she's looking at it, she goes, what operating system is that?
I pulled out my 5 1/4-inch disc for Windows 286 the other day.
Cool.
I've still got them. At any rate, so far we've got about 111 volts, 112 volts now. XP, unsurprisingly, is the majority at 70% of you, followed by the Macintosh at 11%, Linux at 6%, Windows ME, 4-5 votes, 98, 4 votes, 2000, 3 votes, NT,
those
1
are
vote.
5 people I haven't gotten to yet.
95, 1 vote, other
I'm
1 vote.
On
every operating system is listed here. The important part, folks, is that you are done. Microsoft is no longer going to support you, and your operating system is now hanging out there in the breeze. You've got no support, you've got no fixes, and you've got a wide open machine just begging for viruses and stuff to come in.
The really annoying thing is they take stuff off of their knowledge base on
the
older.
That's the hard part. Mm-hmm. We're not even going to be able to support them anymore, because we can't even look stuff up.
And that doesn't take any money because it's already on the hard drive.
Right.
It's on a hard drive somewhere. Just don't delete it.
Yeah, exactly. When you're done, actually, with the poll, you'll see underneath it a yellow box. And there's a link there that says, give us your opinion. That'll take you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. And you'll be able to enter your opinion on things. And that'll give you a chance to say a few more extra things Please keep it clean. I will just delete the things that aren't, but I would prefer not to have to go in and play around. But when you're done with that, please take a look around at my website. I've got reviews and the newsletter and all the other interesting stuff. And then come back and check out the Soundbites website. You'll find links and FAQs and the coolest people in the known universe in our forums. One person reminded me, thank you, by writing here in the opinion poll, that I do a blog. I do a blog on the Security Tango website at securitytango.com. You've heard us talk about that a lot. And one of the links there takes you to my blog, and I talk about security stuff there. It's not like, here's my dog and that stuff. Although, I have to admit, the last couple have been a lot closer to rants than they have been to news items. I admit
okay.
that I've been ranting. I admit. So check them out. That's at securitytango.com and Nick's blog in there.
And
so.
Anybody new to the Soundbites page, also go down on that links page and sign on to Frapper. Frapper is just a kind of a tracker that we track where our listeners are coming from. I mean, we've got them in Hawaii, up in Canada, all over the U.S. So just take a couple minutes and, sign on there just to let us know where you're listening to Soundbites.
Excellent.
And I'd also like to mention, while we're mentioning things, this coming Wednesday, June 14th, at 7 p.m.
That would be after all the
patches
are
patch
out
twos,
and the first full day of no support for 98 or ME.
Yep. You can get your Macintosh support at the Apple Cider Users Group meeting, again, Wednesday, June 14th at East High School, starting at 7 p.m. Noted author and publisher Adam Engst is coming into town. To speak to us. He's the publisher of Tidbits, which is one of the oldest and most respected internet newsletters. He's also been a contributing editor to Mac User, Mac Week, and Mac World magazine, so he's been around a while. And publishes the Take Control book series, little ebooks, very short, very inexpensive ebooks on one specific thing on your computer. So not a 1,000-page tome trying to talk about everything, just a really neat one little thing. And since we are having a special guest in, our meeting will start promptly at 7, and we'll do our news and Q&A after Mr. Ink's presentation. So the presentation will be starting earlier. Again, that's this Wednesday, June 14th, 7 p.m., East High School. More information available on the Apple Cider website, which is applecider.org.
Perfect. And I completely screwed that up. There's a whole month left before the... Yeah. That's July. That's in July. So the whole month left of that. Anyway, back to the phones. Our next caller is Matt from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Matt. What's your question?
Yes, I've been using the Linux Canopic boot CD.
Good for you.
And I just wanted to know, like, every time I go on there to NHL.com and I just want to watch the highlights of the games, like, I have to download a Windows Media Player.
Yep.
And then, of course, if I turn the computer off, I have to go get them again every time I put the CD back in.
Right.
Is there any way I could put Canopic on the hard drive, or can I save these files and then put them on a disk?
Well, yes. You can't save, I don't believe you can save the Windows Media Player because that's going to try to go into the system memory area, and I don't believe that'll save. Files of your own you could save on a thumb drive. So you could take your Canopic CD and your thumb drive anywhere, boot into Canopic and be running your desktop, but the desktop is separate from all those additional files. It's easy enough to install Canopic on your machine. You can, depending on which version of the CD you've got, there should be an icon right on your desktop, or of course, you can just download and burn the real Canopic CD, not the live version, and that is an installer.
Oh, okay.
And then when you're done, you've got Canopic on your machine just instead of Windows, if you've overwritten the entire hard drive, or if you've partitioned it so that there's empty space, you could dual boot. But the point here is that once you've done that, it'll always boot up in Canopic, and you'll always be able to get at your stuff because once you install it, it's installed forever.
Okay. And I have a MacBook. If I put the Windows XP on the one half of the hard drive, can I use the Linux disk in there too?
Maybe.
and that's
that.
Definite, doggone it.
Yeah.
Well, the Apple's Boot Camp software, which allows you to partition your hard drive and install Windows, is specifically designed for Windows XP. The Mac already is Unix, so you may not need to run Knoppix because it already is Unix.
Right.
But there may be someone on the net that's already figured out how to dual boot different flavors of Linux and Windows. There's also another program for the Mac called Parallels. Actually, the company is Parallels. Parallels Desktop is the software. And that allows you to do a virtual environment inside your Mac window. So you'll have your Mac windows and you can load a Windows operating system and a Unix operating system inside your Mac. With Apple Bootcamp software, you have to shut down your Mac and boot Windows, and then you have to shut down your Windows and reboot from the Mac. There's advantages both ways, so there's two different products to help do that.
Okay, thank you.
There you go.
Thanks.
Good luck. I'm not a huge fan of KDE, but there are a lot of good things about it. Anyway, our next caller is Bill from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
All right, I'm thoroughly disgusted with Yahoo.
Okay, good for you.
So if I use Thunderbird, how can I bring any of my email from Yahoo over to Thunderbird?
You have to pay for the higher class of Yahoo Webmail that gives you what's called POP or IMAP mail. In general, Yahoo is only webmail. You can only see it with a web browser like Firefox.
And it resides in their browser.
Now, the other thing is if you're going to stop using Yahoo altogether, you've got another email client, right? Another email address somewhere.
Yeah.
That's not Yahoo.
Right.
In Yahoo, if you don't have a lot of mail, you can mail yourself all your old mail to the new address.
And then you also go through your address book announcing to folks, to letting them know that you're now not going to be using Yahoo Mail, that you're going to be using a new email address, and just send it to them, letting them know to change the email address.
Yeah, you can imagine that Yahoo is not going to make it easy for you to move, but once you've done it, you're done.
Right. Is there some kind of a website or service that will take Yahoo Mail and say switch it over to?
Not that I know of. Although that's an excellent question.
Isn't Return Path? Won't they do something like that? Or is that it's not that efficient?
It's not. I haven't played with it enough to be able to be able to say. There's a program called Free Pops as well that's supposed to do that.
Why, are you talking hundreds of emails or?
Yeah, well, some of it is, yeah. I think there's some stuff in Yahoo that is important to me. That's why I'd like to try and switch it over. Now, the other gentleman said something about a cost.
Yeah, Yahoo has several different mail services. The free mail service just gives you email that you can only look through with a web browser. They have a higher level commercial service that lets you access Yahoo Mail from real mail programs, and that's their POP Mail.
And then that downloads it to your machine.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that you could do is pay for that for a month. And
get them all moved over,
or use a. There is a product called Free Pops, as I said.
Can
I don't
spell it.
F R E E P O P S. Free Pops.
Yep.
And you might want to take a look into that. But beyond
I just found one called Y Pops. It's a Perl script specifically designed to capture your Yahoo Mail into a POP account.
And I just found Yo Sucker. Y O Sucker. another one called Yahoo Pops. So you might take a look at each of those.
All right, I'll try that.
Okay,
right.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Apparently, a lot of people are pretty fed up.
Yeah,
with Yahoo. I've had my own domain for so long that I don't remember the pain of those things.
Well, it's always a pain to switch your email address, and a lot of people won't change providers because they have to switch their email address.
Right, right. Well, if you're going to do that, though, go to Gmail. Then you got the problem of are they searching and looking. That's true of all of them. Listen, we're going to take another quick break, so if you're on the line, hang on. If you're not on the line, why not? It's 222-1180 outside the 585 area code, 1-800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line. And, of course, you Verizon Wireless customers can just hit *1180. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, and with me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Sound Bites. at 20 minutes after the hour. We're just sitting here waiting to talk to you on 1180 WHAM. To Europe.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Last week, I was doing some online banking, but at the time that the situation occurred, I was sitting there idle, wasn't touching the keyboard or anything. And all of a sudden, my hard drive started racing like you wouldn't believe. And the progression bar on my browser was increasing. So automatically, I jumped over to my DSL modem and I shut the power off. And I was curious, was I trying to be hacked into at that time, do you think?
Anything is certainly possible. It may have been completely innocent, but...
Yeah.
I would suggest you absolutely need to run the Security Tango at securitytango.com.
I did that.
And what'd you come up with?
Zero.
And you ran it exactly as it is in the system?
Yep. Okay, and I'm wondering if somebody, is it possible for somebody to come through your connection, where your whatever your connection your browser has, and actually come through your browser and then hijack your system through your browser?
That's not impossible, but if you're running a good antivirus program and you're running a good firewall, as we suggest in the Tango, then that shouldn't necessarily happen.
It could have been Windows reorganizing your files, because likes to do that once
What web page were you viewing at the time?
Citibank.
Inside the bank site?
Yeah, because I was.
Then it's really unlikely that that was what it was.
It could have been an ad. If there's an ad window on the side, the next ad could be downloading to pop up. It could have been Windows Update starting to download something. Could have been your antivirus update
program,
starting to download something. There's a lot of stuff that runs in the background without you knowing it. The Internet Time Server keeps your clock up to date.
Yep.
So there's always some sort of activity running without you actually realizing it's running back there.
Because I was scared, because it wasn't the smaller progression bar in Firefox that runs, you know, when you scroll from page to page. It was the actual larger progression bar that I never ever see move.
Like I say, it could have been some organization being done within Windows on just your system alone, because periodically Windows likes to do that too.
All right, because the same thing happened to me a month ago when I was on 13wham.com.
Yeah. And of course, we're all morally certain that that's a perfectly clean site. But I don't know that I would worry about it in the sense that you've done all of the antivirus stuff and you've run the whole Tango in safe mode and you got the firewall up.
Yeah, I got zone alarms.
Yeah, so you should be fine. Yep.
It had to be something fairly innocuous.
There's also fake pop-up ads that say, you know, your machine is infected, download here.
Yeah, but that shouldn't happen in the middle of
in the middle of a banking site.
So it also may have been, you know, a lot of these sites now are using Ajax, which is Java and all this stuff in the background. So it could have been doing an update to its own little business in the background.
All right, so if it happens, just don't throw the power off on my DSL modem.
Yeah.
You probably don't need to, although that was excellent reflexes. Don't lose that.
You can always double-check your zone alarm and see, kind of double-check what programs you're allowing to come through. Maybe somebody might have inadvertently allowed a particular program to come through that you don't want to.
But enough enough you can't tell, because it's, you know, those LSAS and all that other stuff.
And if they're in question, remove it. Next time it tries to come through, then you can decide which ones you want to come through in that.
All right, thank you.
Good job, Bob. I just have this vision of Bob diving across the room for his DSL.
Mad dash, you know.
And of course, we're delighted that it's a DSL modem as well.
Yep. I did that once, years and years ago. I downloaded some program because it sounded cute, and a box popped up and said, "Now erasing your hard drive." And I go, "Oh, crap," and turned the computer off, thereby buggering my hard drive.
right.
So I set it up on an isolated machine, ran the program again, and after a couple of seconds of "Now erasing your hard drive," another window popped up and said, "Just kidding."
Right, yeah. After you screwed up your machine. Nice. Somebody needs to be slapped. All right, our next caller is John from Orchard Park, New York. Welcome, John. What's your question?
Hi, I'm running Office 2000.
Yes.
And up until about a week ago, when I went to the menu bar and clicked File, I'd get a drop-down menu, and what I'm most interested in, it would show me the last 9 files used.
Right. Yeah.
It stopped doing that, and what I did is I got my CDs out and tried to run repair on Office 2000.
Right.
And nothing happened, and I've gone to tools and, you know, the option there.
That's a preference on how many files it remembers.
Yeah.
And I've gone down, and I've made sure that the checkbox is filled where it says recently used file list 9.
Mm-hmm.
I still get nothing when I go up there and click on file in the menu bar.
Are you opening old files or creating new ones?
Well, in this case, I'm after an old file that that's a good way to get to it, I guess.
Right, it is. But what I have often found is that, particularly in 2000, Windows, Microsoft, I guess Office often got confused. It would put new files, for me this used to happen all the time, it would put new files into the drop-down list, but not old files.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And so eventually stuff would drop off the list, and that may well be simply what happened to you.
One of the things you can try is setting that recent used, recently viewed files to something else, say 1. Quit Word, relaunch Word, and set it back to 9.
So there's a possibility.
Yeah. It may be forgetting that you had it set to 9, and so you're changing it. Looking to see that it is 9 doesn't help anyway. Change it to something else and then change it back.
Change it to 5 and see if it, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, if that doesn't work, is the next thing you try a complete remove and reinstall of Office 2000?
Yeah, the next thing you try is Open Office.
Well, one thing you can do, because what saves a lot of your settings and everything else for the way Word is set up,
yes,
is you look for the normal .dot file.
Sure.
And find that and rename that to normal.old.
Okay.
And when you restart Word, it recreates that normal.dot file, and that might help you out there.
Okay, thanks, fellas.
All right, thank you. Our next caller is Ed from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Ed. What's your question?
Morning. After listening to you guys, I was just curious as to what do you think would be better, a Mac or a Brand X to purchase? Because it seems like, you know, Windows is just, it's everywhere. You can't get away from it. I mean, how... if you buy a Mac, isn't that going to be throwing good money after bad or vice versa or something?
Well, I think you should get Linux, but...
The biggest thing, though, is, and we say this all the time, all three of us, it depends on what you want to use it for, where your support is going to be, and you know who you're going to have to support. So if you're mainly working with folks in a Mac world, then you want to go towards a Mac. If you want to go to, you know, a lot of the folks that you're going to work with and support are on the PC side, you probably want to go to a PC. And it's also where you're going to get your help from and your questions answered going to either one.
And one of the things we've run into a lot with the Macs is that they do everything that the PC can. So whatever types of programs you want are available for the Mac as well. But the Macs come with a lot more of the home user type stuff to begin with. The photo management software, the video editing software, music creation software. So a lot of the stuff you'd have to add onto a PC already comes with the Mac. And a lot of people say, well, I'm never going to want to do that. But then you start thinking, well, I've got a digital camera. I want to bring in my photos. Well, wouldn't it be nice to put a slideshow together and have a soundtrack behind my slideshow? And all right, I've got a video camera. Maybe I want to put some videos together. So a lot of that stuff already comes with the Mac. And in many cases, you don't need as much help with the Mac as you do with a PC. Although switchers often need a translation dictionary.
Right.
They all do the same thing. It just has different words.
As I always say, when I talk to people about moving to a Mac or to a Linux box, I always tell them it's just like buying a new car. You already know how to drive. You just don't know where the controls are.
Yep.
Good point. Let me ask you one more quick one, if I might. If you have an icon that disappears on the screen when you come back, say, to, or somebody else is using it, you come back, how do you get that back up again? I even rebooted it, and supposedly they trickle down and fall into place. I even rebooted it, and it sort of disappeared. Is there a
if
way
it's
to
completely
it?
Gone, then the only way you can get it back is to right-click on the desktop, select Create a Shortcut, and then that'll lead you through looking for the program that you want a shortcut to, and then click on that and say, okay, and then you get a new shortcut back
on
your
desktop.
Or he
can just go to the programs, go to start, go to programs. You go into that particular folder, find the program, right-click on that, and a menu opens up on the side, that, and there's a send to, and you can send to the desktop as a shortcut.
Okay. What did Nick say, the first one? That's an easy one.
Well, if it basically the shortcuts on the desktop, if one gets deleted, you have to make it back again. So if you right-click on the desktop and choose Create Shortcut, then it will ask you what program you want a shortcut back on the desktop.
And you got to know where it is.
You got to know where it is and what it's called.
So if you go into your Start menu and find that program icon already there through the Start menu, you can right-click on it and copy it to the desktop.
Gotcha. All right, thanks a lot.
Yep. All right, thank you. Our next caller is Ken from Nunday, New York. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
I'm running XP Home.
Yes.
And lately I've been having a little problem with Microsoft. It has a program called VCLS ID.
V?
And it, version class ID.
Oh, yeah.
And it steals the whole computer when you open the screen up. And the only way to get rid of it is through Task Manager.
Yep.
Is there any easy fix to get rid of it?
Stop using Windows.
I did a search and it won't find the file, so I can't find it to rename it.
You can't rename it. It's actually part of it's part of Windows. I mean, it's not something you can get rid of, but there is this has been happening a lot ever since a specific hot fix went on.
Yeah, 912812.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm not entirely certain what to tell you about that, since it doesn't. Look easily fixable.
A couple of the suggestions are to uninstall the hot fix.
Right. There's two of them. The one you mentioned, which was number
912812.
Yep.
And 908531.
Right. Yep.
Hopefully they're aware of it, and who knows, maybe this week's version of fixes might fix that fix.
You mean this week, next year, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, the thing I would do is, before I did anything really crazed, I would make sure that
You mean like take it to Enright?
Now, there's something that you should do.
Yeah, well, Dave's good at fixing stuff.
Dave's great at fixing
stuff. We fix the fixes that fix the fix.
You got it. All right. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you so much. That's, of course, the thing we should have mentioned first, which is bring it to an expert.
Maybe I'll have Frank set up by then.
There you go. Frank will be ready. We're going to take a quick break, and Dave will talk more about Frank when Frank is here in Rochester. We're waiting for Frank to show up.
He's on his way.
He should be here any day, and Dave will talk about Frank when Frank is available. But I'll guarantee you, ain't nobody in town got Frank but Dave.
Yep.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, each and every one of you. We've got some folks on the phone. Don't forget, you can join us at 222-1180, 295-1180, or Star 1180 on Verizon Wireless. And so give us a call, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes at 38 minutes after the hour. This is Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Whams that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And this is Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, a couple of quick things to talk about. Microsoft, we talked last week about the Genuine Advantage tool, the Windows Genuine Advantage tool. It seems that this tool, of course, logs into Microsoft every day. Every time you boot the PC, it logs into Microsoft and has a little conversation. Naturally, people immediately assume that this makes it spyware. I also have a rant on the blog site about this one as well.
Maybe that's what was going on with that other gentleman.
That's very
maybe
possible.
Maybe it was having a long conversation with this machine.
Well, it apparently does have a long conversation. The Windows Genuine Advantage software checks to see whether or not you're a lousy, no-good, scum-sucking
assumes
pirate.
You are.
Assumes you are, and checks to see whether or not it's correct. It's a when it first was introduced last year, it ran only when you were installing updates, so you didn't notice it was going on. Microsoft recently updated the tool, actually in April, with the Windows Genuine Advantage notification feature. It checks the legitimacy of Windows on a machine, regardless of whether or not the update services are being used. Microsoft, of course, says it's not actually stealing information off your hard drive or telling it anything. It's checking a server-side configuration setting to determine if it should run or not. So it runs, calls in, and decides whether or not it should run.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I believe that.
And
that
I
makes sense to me.
And I got some swap land for you, too.
And the answer is always yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the check-in also gives Microsoft the ability to disable the Windows Genuine Advantage program if necessary. You should read my rant on that. I admit I wrote a little rant on that on the blog, Nick's blog at securitytango.com. So check that out. I won't repeat it here probably because I would just blow a vein right out the side of my neck. But I did do that. This issue, of course, raises a lot of privacy concerns about how companies are controlling software that is increasingly being delivered over the internet as a rented service, as well as how they control and disseminate information by communicating with the renters of those services. So that's a big problem right now. People are having that problem. Microsoft has now said they're changing the way the anti-piracy tool works. It's only going to check in every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that helped a lot. Thanks.
Yeah.
They say no meaningful data is exchanged. And it requires that validation to work before anybody can download additional Microsoft software, such as the media player and stuff like that. They say it is not required for security fixes
yet.
But we'll see. We'll see what happens. The information that Microsoft says they're grabbing is your Windows XP product key, the PC maker, like that's any of their business, the operating system version, PC BIOS information. So maybe you don't want to set any sort of password in there you've ever used anywhere else because you just sent it to Microsoft, and the user's local setting and language. They do tell you in the license that this information is being sent. So I suppose that's something.
So you better start reading your licenses.
Yeah.
Better start reading your licenses. At any rate, those of us on Linux and those of us on Macintoshes are just laughing up our sleeves. Our next caller is Ron from Honey Eye, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's your question?
Hey, good program.
Thanks.
Quick question, and I'm not real technical, but I've got an old 98 Windows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably about 8 years old, and it's slow, and I can't get DSL or high speed out where I'm at in Honey Eye, so
yeah.
I'm thinking about a new computer and looking at the D110 desktop. Any particular instructions that I should be looking at?
It won't be any faster for getting on the internet if you're using dial-up. A faster computer won't help any.
But in terms of the machine itself, it will be faster when you do things locally. But unless you've got a faster connection, you'll never be any faster on the internet.
Won't help any, huh?
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
No, because
that has to do entirely with the size of the pipe between you and the internet. And when you're on a dial-up, I don't care if you're using an old handheld or you're using a supercomputer. You're still only going to go through that fast.
If you're out of range of DSL or cable, you could always look into satellite, which is starting to come down in price quite a bit. They're down to about $50-$60 a month. So people that really need high-speed internet, when you're out of range of the landlines, you can still go for satellite internet.
Yeah, I checked them out. I think it was Roadrunner or something. They could put it in for like $35,000.
Yeah, they'll run the cable to your house, yep,
if you pay for it.
Well, one of the other things you can do, depending on how many neighbors you have around you, get a petition from all your neighbors saying they'll buy the cable TV or cable internet if Roadrunner pays for the wire themselves.
And keep checking with DSL also, because they're constantly expanding literally month after month the areas that they are covering because it goes over your local phone lines.
Right.
Yep. And I keep watching, like AOL has the thing on there, but they don't come out this way either.
Well, AOL and Earthlink, they all resell Frontier and Time Warner cables anyway.
Right. So until those are out there, you can't get the others.
Okay.
Okey-doke.
The other thing is, on the old system that I've got, would it make much sense to just pull it out of where it is, set it up somewhere else, and use it for, you know, the Excel programs and that kind of thing where I don't need it?
Most definitely. You could set up a little it's becoming very popular in most homes that, you know, they'll have one computer that, say, is on the internet and another one they just wanted the kids to be able to do homework or whatever, and they set up a little miniature network and, you know, you can...
Just offline, huh?
Yeah.
Well, and given the fact that this is the very last month you will ever receive security updates for Windows 98, I would definitely take it off the internet.
Okay. All right. That makes sense then.
There you go.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ron.
Bye.
It's, you see, you keep saying to yourself, you know, I talk to a lot of people, and I talk to a lot of the students at work, and they're all, because I'm at RIT, and they're all saying, well, who's using Windows 98? A whole lot of people.
Yes.
Millions of people are still using it, and that's the deal.
For what they're doing, it works fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
So but if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Well, now you got to do something because you can't get on the internet for it. But if you've got a non-internet system, a system that's just not hooked up to anything else, there's no reason not to leave it the way it is. Listen, we're going to take another quick break at 49 minutes after the hour. We'll be back as soon as humanly possible with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Dan Cole, with me, Nick Francesco. We've got a few of you folks on the line. We'll get to as many of you as we can when we come back with the next segment of Soundbites here, which is, of course, as we all know, the greatest computer show in the known universe. I believe that's now the official title. You can't say one without the other.
Yep.
Here on 1180 WHAM.
WHAM from a computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 54 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Our next caller is Lance from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Lance. What's your question?
One is I'm driving, but because I started and parked and it took so long to wait. The question is, why does Tango takes so darn long? It took me a day and a half.
Well, yes, it will. That's the problem with the Tango.
That's the problem with Windows.
Well, yeah, yes, it's a problem with Windows. The depending on the speed of your machine, depending on how many files you've got, depending on how big a hard drive you have, depending on how much RAM you have, the Tango can take anywhere from a couple of hours to a couple of days. The real problem is there's no shortcut. It's the only way to guarantee your machine is going to be clean. As long as you keep using Windows, as long as you keep using Internet Explorer, as long as you keep using Outlook Express, as long as you keep
I'm
using...
I'm not Let's... using either Internet Explorer or Outlook Express. I use Mozilla, but I wasn't on Mozilla at the time. It was... the individual programs, like the first one I've forgotten, but VirusScan, can I skip parts of it?
Really should never skip parts of it. I'm sorry, Lance.
Not in the Tango.
No. I mean, can I skip files? Like only scan the program files and
the problem now is that so many viruses hide inside Word documents, inside Excel documents, inside PowerPoint files, that skipping them leaves
open. Most
of
those I don't even have. But
here's the bottom line, Lance. I mean, we can talk about this all day, but here's the bottom line. If you skip some files, you chance giving yourself a virus. There's no shortcut for that. I wish it were easier. Our next caller is Bob from Rush, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. What's up?
I'm battling with the PC as usual. Have somehow obtained the downloader AUX virus.
Yep.
When it,
I was already I saw your question on screen here. And if you do a Google search,
I've gone through the McAfee stuff. I've gone through, and it seems as though I've gotten rid of part of it, except I keep getting the antivirus.
All right, here's
stuff.
What you want to do. If you do a Google search on downloader AUX Trojan, there is a you'll come to a couple screens, And they recommend, matter of fact, the very first one downloaded is a Trojan and how to resolve it. And on that particular answer, if you scroll down a little bit, there's a person that has posted a program, and it's called HAXFIX.exe.
HaxFix.
Yep, I'm looking at it right now.
All right, if you download and run that and put it on your desktop, they run you through a whole bunch of things that should clean that out.
Okay, because I've gone through the system reg. I've gotten rid of a couple that appeared to be the culprits.
Yeah. No, a lot of these Trojans, what they do is they'll go in under and hide as one name, totally innocent, and create others.
Yeah,
so you get rid of those others the minute you reboot or do anything else. This other hidden program that you got to know what you're looking for regenerates others that regenerate the downloader.
Yep, and now I know with McAfee they were suggesting that I turn off my system restore, that option.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't try and restore an old version while I'm trying to do the process.
Right, and now, a lot of the viruses and spyware hide in those system restore points.
Now, once I get it fixed,
then you turn the restore
back on. Reboot immediately, so that's the last known point.
Yeah.
And then I hope won't get it again.
That's the hope.
Yeah, once you turn, once you clean the machine out, then you got to go back in through the tangle and turn restore back on, so you start recreating those restore paint points in case at any given time,
I ran the full tango.
Okay.
Full Adaware, full scan, tango, stinger, the whole nine yards, plus a McAfee scan, and it still kept peeking and poking.
Okay. Yep.
All right, thanks a lot. That's unfortunately, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to those to whom we did not get, leading us back to our admonition. Call early, call often.
Next week, I have to tell them about Frank.
If Frank shows up this week. And
Frank in.
Bring Frank with
you. I'll bring Frank in.
You're not here next week.
Yes, I am.
Oh, it's some other week.
Yeah.
I'm not here.
Yeah.
All right. Bring Frank. We'll let Frank talk on the air.
Yeah.
We'll let Frank be with us. He's a good guy. We'll have Frank with us. We're done. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. At 59 minutes after the hour, this has been Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.